my name is Catherine Armitage. I've turned activist with regards to everything that's going on in the world, because I just couldn't sit by and watch our country going downhill without doing something about it. So my background, I went to uni for a short while to read history, and then I actually gave that up because I was always an artist, and I ended up going and studying art and textile design. And yes, now I would say I'm pretty much a full-time activist in every way that possibly presents itself.
Okay, so look, you're talking about the decline of Britain. I mean, we keep getting told, don't we, it's okay, economic growth is coming, it's just around the corner. What is it about, you know, your experience over the years which has driven you to get so involved in trying to stop this decline?
Yes, good question. Well, I would say I've always been interested in the environment, and when I was in my 20s, I would go around to the Friends of the Earth cycle rides and raise money for them and this sort of thing. And then more recently, when I moved to this village where I live now, Coombe Martin in North Devon, we saw terrible pollution on our beautiful bathing beach from partly from South West Water, because they were doing these combined sewer overflows. They built a tank which was about the size of a private swimming pool, which was supposed to take all our water runoff in our small valley, plus all the sieved poo from the sewage system. And then when they got the chance, they would just dump that into the river, and that was acceptable. And as we know, this has been going on all around the country, and South West Water and other water companies have been hauled over the coals about that and fined, but unfortunately they carry on. So I'd say that's my that was my first real encounter with the deterioration of the quality of water, shall we say.
Right. And also, of course, you're not actually that far from Camelford, are you? Which is one of the sites of a horrific, when water was privatised back in the 1980s. I mean, this was an absolutely horrific incident where aluminium of some sort was put into the water supply, and South West Water didn't really want to admit it for quite a long time. In fact, they was fighting the legal cases through the courts for many years. But you know, people were injured and possibly even killed by this poison basically being put into their water supply.
That's right. And you know, we are Cornwall is obviously neighbouring county, and that particular incident was a very serious one. But around our coast, there are similar problems with South West Water, and I was the secretary for our Water Watch group, and I used to go to meetings once a month with the Water Watch, with South West Water and the Environment Agency, and they were, I would say, kicking the can down the road. And I arranged a meeting with the highways, with South West Water, the Environment Agency, with people from the mines, because they weren't taking into consideration in Coombe Martin we have mines, silver mines, and they fill up with water. And then we have adits, and that takes the water into the river. And their tanks also possibly could have been filling up with the water from the silver mines. So they weren't looking at the problem, I would say, holistically. They were only looking at the part that suited them, and then they put their solution on the table. And actually, most of my life I've spent as an alternative health practitioner. I practice homeopathy, and I've run naturopathic detox retreats for many years, and I look at people's health problems from a holistic perspective, and that's how I look at our country's problems. And it seems to me that you know, just taking this South West Water as a microcosm in our village, there's so many other better solutions. We could have a huge anaerobic digester. We could have one or two anaerobic digesters, which would mean that South West Water don't have to pump the sewage up the hill to the sewage works, which is inefficient and costly and which they don't like doing. And as soon as the bathing season is finished, 1st of October, we have combined sewer overflows in, I think it was in 2020, running every single day for the month of October, as soon as the Environment Agency were not testing the water. So looking at things holistically, an anaerobic digester, or several in our village, would be a far more efficient way of dealing with our
Okay, so what is an anaerobic digester?
Good question. Well, we used to have a guy who put them in, living in the village here, and he did a presentation for us. It's basically like a big tank, looks a bit like a small submarine, and you get bacteria going in that tank, and you put in something like a few dead chickens, or you know, a bit of meat, and it gets the bacterial process going. All your sewage gets put into that anaerobic digester, it gets broken down, and amazingly what comes out is water.
Well, it sounds much too good to be true. It sounds like what would come out is total sludge.
Yes, but actually what comes out is water. And there, you can fit small ones, you can fit large ones. In fact, South West Water do also use anaerobic digesters, so they know about them. But for some reason, they're not choosing the most efficient service that they could provide. Why that is, we might well ask.
Well, yeah, and you used to be able to ask, by the way, in the days of the water boards. You could go along to the water board and you could suggest these things to them. And generally speaking, they would be much more likely to consider it and discuss it. They might do a little study looking into the costs. And all this sort of thing was done in public. So maybe you could say something about just what these, it's like dealing with these giant companies, who owns them, this sort of thing.
Well, that's a good point. I mean, you know, Paul McNee, who used to come to our meetings, I like Paul very much. And, you know, we became friendly because we used to see each other a lot. And in fact, through him, I got I was able to go to the Bathing Water Conference in Belfast, which is a very interesting conference to be part of. And you know, we did talk about all of these things, but really, Paul, his job was being a PR man. You know, he was a very nice guy, but he wasn't going to implement this kind of big change. And I realised that. And then the next campaign, which I went on to, because we did actually achieve clean bathing water on our beach, which was going to be downgraded. There were lots of other people who then came in from the village and worked really hard to achieve that, raising awareness, big village hall meeting, and villagers all pulling together, which is how it should be, because they realised that we had a problem. And then I moved on to the 5G campaign, which is, I think, how I met you. And that is, again, it's a very, very different sort of problem, because for most people, 5G is, you know, fifth generation system, they say, of communications, but I'm not quite sure about that. But it certainly is the Internet of Things, and also including the Internet of Bodies and bringing everything together. I mean, Boris Johnson sums it up neatly in his speech 2019 to the United Nations. He says, you know, your fridge will beep for more cheese, your electric car will be all tuned into your parking space, your garage will sweep wide, your boiler will be turned on your way back from holiday. Everything will be linked up and through Wi-Fi and small cells and great big 5G masts. And we could see all this coming, and several of us went on a regular basis to ask questions to Devon County Council. I took my radio frequency radiation meter to the meeting and put it up to the microphone to show them just how high the radiation was in their council chamber. And the head of the council told me to turn it off pretty quickly. But I think the point was got across that because this radiation is invisible, you can't smell it, you can't taste it, it's not like sewage in the water. It's a much more difficult campaign to raise awareness on.
Now, we've also this week chatting to a lady called Joy Warren from the Fluoride Free Alliance. And
yes.
So can you say something about that? Because this whole idea of this is a kind of way of medicating people, apparently. And there's a lot of evidence now in the States that, you know, actually putting fluoride in water could reduce children's IQ by 5 points. Now, there's all sorts of questions about the wisdom of all of this, that sort of thing.
There certainly is. Joy Warren, she's actually been on our 5G Zoom Sunday night, and she's done amazing work to raise awareness. And we work very closely, not so much recently, but in the past, my partner lived in Bedford, and one of his great friends is Cynthia Bargy, who stopped the Bedford area from being fluoridated. She's in her late 70s, possibly even 80 now. And she's just recently written a book called Teeth, which is all about raising awareness about this. And fluoride is, it's a class 2 poison. It's not something that you want to have in your water. But it, in America, and I don't know so much about this country, but it's like a waste from industry, and they want to get rid of it. And why not get rid of it and poison people at the same time?
Well, it's horrible thought,
it's a crazy
isn't it? But
situation.
See, what I'm saying, I suppose, is the privatisation is really, really big part of that, of water. But anyway, we're not here to talk specifically about water today, although, of course, at this time of year around Easter, we should understand that water is the most important thing on the planet. There's loads and loads of beautiful, pure water freely available out there, and it would be nice to think that these water firms were pumping it to us at cost. What's really going on, of course, is that the companies that own them are now refinancing these water businesses. The focus is mainly on Thames Water, where they're saying rather than renationalise it, it's much better to refinance it and put the prices up 30%, so that more debt can be serviced by the companies that own it. But anyway, we're here to talk about council tax, really, aren't we? So why is this floating your boat at the moment?
Well, good question. I mean, what I've just said about South West Water, and also about Devon County Council ignoring their own survey on 5G, that was the first things that made me think, our local councils are ignoring us. We need to have representation. We're being taxed. What is that money being spent on? I want to see an itemized bill. And then I discovered through the work of Chris Coverdale that, in fact, all the council tax money goes into a consolidated fund with other tax money. And then some of that can be used to fund war in Gaza or war in Ukraine. And I am not at all, and nor my partner, in agreement with...
So hang on, can we clarify? Is this an account that's held by the local authority or central government?
Central government, that consolidated fund. And there is, there's One of the speakers at our event is coming from Cornwall. He's an ex-police, actually, ex-CID, and he has done a deep dive and talked to councillors in Cornwall and has been told that the money does go to this consolidated fund. But if you do a Freedom of Information request, what comes back is what the money is being spent on locally. But they don't tell you that it's been via central government. That is kept quiet. So there's not full transparency there either.
Okay, look, let's just look at council tax for a minute, because you and I are old enough to remember the 1980s and the 1990s with the all the riots to do with the poll tax, which was...
Yes.
Which was, people think, was the creation of Margaret Thatcher. Actually, it was William Waldegrave. It was Victor Rothschild. There was a whole bunch of these people. In fact, I think the journalist Michael Crick has probably done the best paper on all what led to the poll tax. And, of course, there was a massive protest. The aim was to shift the tax burden away from the homeowner, which had been decided for many years, certainly way back beyond even the Second World War, that it's absolutely pointless to put tax on people who are living in an area if they don't have any money. And the people that do have the money are the landowners and the landlords. So the tax was always on them. And it included, by the way, a tiny amount for water. For example, we were just talking about water. So this was the old system, the rates, the water rates and the local council rates. And those were paid by the owner of the home, and they would then rent it out to somebody who didn't pay any of that. So that was the previous system. Thatcher decided that it was going to be a poll tax because it was going to be on per head. So it's on the person rather than the property owner. So this is an enormous change. And despite the riots and everything, that never really got changed. So when the council tax came in, it stayed as something which is on you rather than on the property.
Yes, yep, and it's still a very unfair tax, I think. You know, some people do get a bit of a discount if they're a single person or if they're on benefits, but it's also a huge tax that people have to pay, and then it goes up. I mean, I've just been reading about something called the Clearfield Doctrine. I mean, this is like an aside, but it's relevant that when a local government or when the government starts to do business, then it actually loses its power to govern. And there's so many aspects to this, so many things to look into, so many rabbit holes to go down, that it's sometimes hard to know, you know, where to start, and people just think, you know what, it's just easier to pay because I don't really understand.
Yeah, but all it takes is one person to challenge it through the courts. I mean, say for example, here in Bristol, we've got a council that owns obviously the a lot of property, including many of the roads, the streets, and they've decided they're going to impose this clean air zone thing that they call, and it means that people visiting the city often get fined without realizing they're going to get fined. It's very difficult to find out whether you have to pay this tax or not. And so really they're just using the property like a kind of toll booth. So this is suddenly they're moving into the area of a private business away from being a local authority there to serve the local people.
Yes, exactly that. And I actually was one of those visitors who got nabbed with that clean hair zone. I was coming back from organising an event, towing a trailer, and I got caught. There were certain roads with the trailer. I'm not that experienced a driver that I didn't know whether I'd be able to get down. And I found myself sort of somewhere down by the docks, and then I got nabbed. So, as you do, you just not being familiar with the roads in the city and how to navigate my way around it. And that was because the M4 and the M5 were closed. So there was like sort of extenuating I hope you
didn't have to pay it, because they have said that if it's you're forced into the zone through a road closure, you don't have to pay.
That's quite interesting. Well, I suppose I was supposed to pay it because I could have never found a way around, but being unfamiliar with those roads.
So the idea is it's a kind of trap, really, to trap people who aren't familiar with it.
Yeah, I think that is the way that people get caught. And I know that I was caught like that in Birmingham as well. I had absolutely no idea that there was a clean air zone in Birmingham. It was at the very beginning when they put it on. And I think they have caught many people like that.
Yeah.
You know, again, this kind of thing, it puts people's backs up. Mm. And it's, you know, for the average person to have to pay out these fines on top of a low wage and huge council tax and high utilities, it becomes... unrealistic and unlivable.
But the council here is now absolutely reliant on this for revenue. So you know, it is slowly morphing from a local authority to a business. But you please carry on.
Yes, so the Clearfield Doctrine, it's worth people looking at. It's not a very long piece of paperwork either. It's an American thing, and it's December 1997, and it's just literally 1.5 pages, and it's very clear about governments and local governments not becoming, or that their roles change, and when they become a business, and there's certain rules that they then have to follow. There has to be a contract, and you know, with council tax, people say, oh well, you know, it's a statutory requirement, it comes from the government. But as we've just said, if the government or local government starts to act as a business, then actually they do need a contract.
Yeah, these things should definitely be challenged in the courts. But the thing is, this is an American document, not a British one.
True. But it does, it seems that it is relevant to us as well. So that's just one thing. I mean, other experiences that I've actually had myself is through not having paid council tax now for, this is the beginning of the fourth year. And I must say, this has taken quite a good deal of courage, because I'm in my mid-60s and I've been a council tax payer for decades. You know, I'm not one of these people who never pays anything and sort of is on the run. I've always been what I would consider to be a law-abiding citizen, and so has my partner. But when you know, COVID hit and we saw so many things going on which were very questionable, and then we became involved with people who were questioning everything and thinking critically. So we thought, okay, you know, we don't want this money to go towards war. We're going to give a conditional acceptance that if the council can prove to us that the money is not spent on war and terrorism, then, and is spent on local services, we'll be happy to pay. And that has been our position for the last 3 years. And, you know, they've sent the boys round. We've been summoned to court. We've gone to court. We have gone to court in our, I don't know what kind of listeners you get, but we've gone to court in the capacity of our living, as a living man and woman, Catherine and Stuart, and we took our birth certificates with us, which are the representation or the documentation of our legal fiction, which the council are requiring to pay this council tax. And we didn't make joinder with them in the court. There were three magistrates sitting at the top there above us, and they all suddenly got up and left. And then we were asked to leave. We were told that we had to leave by the security chap, and I said, how come they've disappeared? I mean, it was not transparent to me what actually happened in that court. And we had run the court, this was the magistrates' court in Barnstable the week before, and said, we've been summoned to court on magistrate's court notepaper, headed notepaper, and it says that our case is at 9:30 on whatever it was, Monday, whatever date. And we asked the court if they had a record of this, and they said that they didn't. So I said, well, you know, I thought a magistrate's court was a criminal court. This is a civil matter. How, why is it that we're getting, you know, hauled into the magistrate's court? The chap who was the on the phone at the magistrate's court said, oh, the council have that room in the court on Monday at 9:30. So I said to him, well, you know, how can that be? And he said, oh, it's for council tax. So I can't tell you all the different laws and things, but something changed in 2003, and they suddenly seem to be able to do these bulk lorry orders, which is when the representative of the council comes in with, I think on the day that we went in, there were 1,000 people who had not paid their council tax. I mean, that's a lot of people, and that's showing, you know, that was just that week, showing how many people are presumably finding it difficult to pay council tax, or like us, are making a stand. And then the magistrates are shown this bulk order by the pile of papers by this council representative, and they agree that all of these people are going to be given liability orders. There's no separate document. There's no separate hearing for most of these people. There's no signed liability order. The way the paperwork is produced is very, very questionable, shall we say.
So were you the only people there who actually appeared? And I wonder whether, yes, whether all those 1,000 had also got summons to be there.
They all would have got summoned, and we were the only two out of all of those people who actually turned up.
Right.
It's quite surprising, isn't it?
Well, I'm just trying to understand this, because, I mean, maybe what we're thinking is that those other 1,000 people were just expecting that there was going to be a judgment made against them for not paying their council tax and didn't show.
That's right. Yes, that's correct. And they would all have got a liability order. But interestingly, we haven't received one yet for last year. I'm not saying that won't happen, because sometimes people take action and they will say, oh, nothing's happened. You know, it's all ended.
Hmm.
And you might think that, and then suddenly you get a letter.
Yeah, it might come out of the blue. Yeah, out of the blue. Lovely. You know, here's one for the last 5 years. So anyway, how have you gotten on? Because it's not just last year that you haven't paid your council tax. How have you gotten on with the previous years and all that lot?
Yes. Well, we have sent them a lot of correspondence, and we used Chris Coverdale's conditional acceptance and the trust. So you put aside money in a trust with his method, which says that money is put aside for them to pay as long as they can show you that the money is not being spent on war and terrorism, and as long as the money is being spent on local services. So that's our main argument that we have used over the last 3 years. We have received various correspondence back. We try to write always to there's a legal advisor to the court or to the council. I can't quite remember her title, but we try to write to her. And as far as we know, so far, we got our council tax demand for 2025. No, was it 25, 26? We've received that. They have taken no notice of our correspondence. And so now we are considering what to do next. hence an event which we're now organising, because we want to get a lot of people together who are all in a similar situation and pool the knowledge of people who have maybe gone further down the road. And we are considering actually taking the council to court, making a claim, because they appear to be breaking their own rules, which is, you know, that. And I'm not one of these people who can come out with all the rules that they're breaking, because my mind does. I've got them written down in my folder, which is now my extensive leverage folder with the council tax label on it, so I can refer to them. But yes, there's a lot that is grey. There's grey areas about what is the jurisdiction of the magistrates.
Well, I mean, this may be why these three magistrates marched out.
Yes, and it could be, because we've seen that has happened with other people. I mean, we watch the many interviews with Richard Vobes, and he does some very interesting interviews, because he's interviewing people's real life experiences. And there's a guy called Mick Butler up in Coventry, and the magistrate definitely left during his court case. So yes, you're right. And so why is it these bulk listings are being dealt with in a magistrate's court, which is a criminal court? It's not. It's grey. There's questions surrounding it.
Yeah, I think maybe it's because non-payment of council tax. Surely that could be punishable by some sort of detention, you know, a prison sentence or something.
Yes, well, Chris Coverdale himself, many years ago, was actually imprisoned for non-payment of council tax. Apparently now you can't be imprisoned for non-payment, but they send you some extremely threatening letters, and to do this journey, really, I think you either have to be one of those people who puts two fingers up at authority, which is not really my character, or you have to develop nerves of steel. You have to be like, we're living in this system is beginning to look tyrannical. The bills are going up, and you know, where's the money going to come from? And there's people in this country who would find it very difficult to stand up to this. They're, you know, they've got families, they've got elderly people they're looking after, they've got a lot of responsibilities. They simply do not have the time, energy and bandwidth in their lives to do this.
No, I totally agree. Well, can you just give us some examples of people who've been doing similar things to you in other parts of the country and how they've got on?
Yes, well, there is... Richard Vobes, I think himself, he actually did pay, I think he paid 1 year with a bill of exchange. But that actually, I think the next year he tried the same strategy, but it didn't yield the same results. And it may be that somebody who accepted that bill of exchange thinks, boy, this is a really good idea, and accepts it. And then perhaps their superior says, you can't be accepting bills of exchange and promissory notes for council tax. Who knows? We know, you know, I know people in Devon and Cornwall who have been pursuing the same strategy as we have. I also know two people up in London who have, they're on the same year as we are, but the London boroughs have come down very, very heavily on them, and with way more threats than we've had in backwater Devon. One is in London Borough of Barmet. She's had charging order put on her property. Another one has had a charging order put on her property. One of these people has her property in a trust. And she has what's called an RX1 restriction, which is a form that you can fill in from the land registry. And your trustees have put a restriction, effectively, or the land registry puts a restriction on the property, so that if a charging order is put on by the council on top of that restriction, the council have to wait. The council, the trustees would have to agree that the property would be sold.
Sounds like the same kind of restrictions being put on the Russian oligarchs in London, where they have their property seized. I mean, it just doesn't sound as if... It sounds as if the whole point of council tax these days is to... And of course, many of the increases in council tax are way above inflation. People in Birmingham are wondering, well, why am I even bothering to pay it? They're not even getting their bins emptied, and there are rats running around everywhere and rubbish piling up on the corners.
That's right. I saw that in one of Matt Hoy's posts on Facebook. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And just to explain that if you have your house in a trust, if you the RX1 restriction protects you as the trust beneficiary, that your property is protected from the council grabbing it. Whereas those who maybe don't have their property in a trust, the council are bullying them to force the sale of a property to grab that property and to grab the revenue.
Oh, yeah, I see what you mean. But what about people who don't own their own properties, though?
Well, it's interesting because people like Graham Moore say that they're in a better position because they don't own the property, and therefore there's nothing to take. So there wouldn't be any collateral damage in that case. We have had quite a bit of experience with bailiffs now taking this route, and I call it the battle on the doorstep. You know, we're in a silent war at the moment, where most people wouldn't even know that anything's going on, but they do see a lot of price hikes, and they see things happening, but they don't put it all together as a picture of the deterioration of the country, and you know they don't like to see that this could be a manufactured deterioration of the country and a manufactured way to batter small businesses and get them closed down and to put pressure on the lovely people of this country and lovely, often quite innocent people, I think, of this country.
Well, no, you're right. So what have you faced at the door, and what advice have you got for people when suddenly bailiffs turn up and you actually are challenging the whole concept of what they're up to?
Yes. Well, the first time, it's funny now to look back on, but it was nerve-wracking at the time. I received a text from a bailiff that they were going to turn up to seize our goods between 2 and 9 p.m. on a Thursday. And this is probably in 2022. And to be honest, I was terrified. I think I've been so programmed with fear, and this is another thing, you know, to take into account, to go against authority and to have a bailiff turning up to seize my property. I was scared, and I rang David Abelman. He calls himself the people's lawyer, and I said, look, David, you know, what should I do? And he said, you know what to do, door shut, mouth shut. And I'm like, okay. And so I put the phone down to him, and luckily that bailiff did not actually turn up, but he did call, and I spoke to him, and in that short conversation I could see what a bully this man was. He was trying to twist what I said around, and it was good that I had that experience, because I thought, you know, the good people of this country are being bullied, and this isn't correct. And this does tie in with council tax. So anyway, the bailiff didn't turn up, which was a great relief. And but it had it put me through some bravery training, I would say. And then the next time there was a knock on the door, and we live in quite a tall house, and I was up on the second floor, and I looked down and saw it was a bailiff who said, "Is Ms. Catherine here?" or whatever. And I said, I just didn't say anything, and I certainly didn't go down to open the door. And after now, I would say, 10 bailiff visits, door shut, mouth shut works. That's what I would recommend to people who don't really know what to say, because if you get yourself into a bit of a challenging dialogue, and then the bailiffs, because they're bullies, decide to call the police, you can then find the police turning up because there's a so-called breach of the peace, which is made up by them most of the time. So I would say door shut, mouth shut is the best way. And by the way, the police are not allowed to come and aid these so-called enforcement officers. That's actually against the law. And I think there has just been some sort of court case, but I can't cite this because I'm not very good at citing things, where the police have lost a case where they did turn up to support enforcement officers.
So can you tell us about this council tax event there, where and when?
Yeah, probably thoroughly put everybody off coming to this, but you know, you spoke earlier about pushing back. That's what we have to do.
Well, I mean, I think the thing is, many people are in the situation they can't necessarily pay their council tax, or they can see in the next few years it's going to be impossible. And so this is really useful, good info. And maybe you can tell us, even if people can't get to this event, if there'll be some info or, you know, recordings or whatever available afterwards, that sort of thing.
Absolutely. There will be. The whole event is going to be recorded. So this event is on Sunday, the 27th of April, 2025, 9:30 to 4 p.m. And it is in Exeter, on a farm. It's the postcode is EX49JL. It is called Council Tax, Do We Pay or Resist? Exploring the issues, options and experiences. And the speakers include Richard Vobes, Sandy Adams, the ex-CID guy who I mentioned to you, the policeman, Chris Coverdale, Carl Deans, who comes from the Sovereign Project. Sandy Adams, I mentioned, she's actually speaking about devolution and the issue of lack of representation. And then we're going to have Q&A sessions and also, you know, panel so the audience can get involved. We very much want to hear about what the audience are thinking. And this event is not an event in isolation. So we ran an event, it's Goffinland, Pinhoe, Exeter. And I'll just say the postcode again. It's EX49JL.
But I mean, it sounds to me as if you're going to have a car to find this place. I mean, Exeter's quite good on public transport. You can get coaches and trains down there. But is it reachable from the centre of Exeter?
Yes, people can come to Exeter Station, and it's a short taxi ride to get to this venue.
Okay.
Also, if people let us know, they can find me. I can give out my email address if that would be helpful. It's a bit of a long one. It's cranleyhouse.catherine@gmail.com, and that's CRAN for November, LEIGH house dot as in Point Katherine, Katherine, at gmail.com. People can always message me. The event is also on the Seven Concerned Citizens and the Concerned Citizens Advisory Assembly website, the link. And this is the context in which these events sit, because the Seven Concerned Citizens, who are people who live in Devon and Cornwall, actually have had several visits to Torbay Council, and who completely ignored their representations. And you can see the history, because it's too much for me to go into, but you can see the history on the Seven Concerned Citizens website, which will come up if you put it into your search engine. It's www.seven, as in S-E-V-E-N, concernedcitizens.co.uk. And we held a food and farming event at the same place, Finland, just outside Exeter, in January, and a report has been drawn up from that event, and report will be drawn up from this council tax event, which will be submitted to the council with various different suggestions. For example, transparency of what the council tax will be paying for, etc. So, and then we're going to be doing another event, which is on the 20th of July. It's another Sunday, and this will be on devolution. So we are producing a series of documents for the council to let them know what the people think as a group.
It's also kind of useful for listeners if you have documents where, say, for example, you've got your council tax bill, either can't pay or don't want to pay or want to know more before you pay. Are there any sort of documents that people can download or even post out, I suppose, which will help you, say, letters, form letters to reply, so to help you deal with that sort of situation?
Yes, there are, and that's a good question. There's an interesting website. I'll just find the exact. It's called Council Tax Fraud. I'll just find the exact address of it on the internet, because that has got a very good introductory. No, can't find it, because I need the exact web link. But I'm just trying to think.
Let's just pause and wait until you found that. I mean, it's annoying, isn't it? Because the search engines don't help you. Any of these sites which are really interesting and good and useful, they're basically blanked by the search engines these days.
That is so true.
Yeah. So anyway, I'll give you the time to find that, because it'd be useful to give that address out.
It would, yes. Here we go. I think I've got it. In fact, I'm just thinking it's on our event ticket link, so I can find it on there and read it out for you.
It's funny, isn't it, Catherine? It is so funny the way that the search engines, anything that's extremely useful like this, that they don't seem to know about it. In fact, I suspect that the algorithms are deliberately being shared amongst all the big search engines to make sure, say, for example, information about the war in Ukraine, the complicity with the genocide in Gaza, these sorts of subjects are now not findable on many search engines.
I completely agree. And they'll take you down another route. In fact, an extraordinary example of this is a book which is about vaccines, and it's called Turtles All the Way Down. I can't actually remember the name of the author. Somebody has actually created a replica book with the same cover and the same title, which gives the opposite conclusion to the original book. That's just an incredible thing.
Well, it shows actually that sort of thing, if it's unregulated, so in other words, that the original author hasn't been able to get rid of it and stop it. I mean, if someone did it, funnily enough, my book, The Traitors of Arnhem, Martin Bormann and the Bilderberg Group, there was an author was commissioned to write a piece a few years after that, which came out last year, 2024, called The Traitor of Arnhem. And so that's got massive amounts of marketing, and it's on, you know, it's in the Waterstones sitting there. And of course, so when people are looking for my book, often they'll find this book, which is, you know, is, well, I don't want to say it's rubbish, but it's nothing compared to my joining the dots between Churchill and Hitler and Martin Bormann and Desmond Morton during the war, and the links between the British state and the Nazi state at the end of the war.
Yes.
You know, so what's the name of this book again you were talking about, and how do we tell if it's the real one?
I know, well, that's a very good question. That particular book has got a very unusual title. It's called Turtles All the Way Down. And I'll see if I can find the author. I'll check it out. But while I'm doing that, I have now got this website, so I can give you the exact URL. It is counciltaxfraud.co.uk. So it's quite easy. Should be quite easy to find just by.
I mean, this is so ridiculous that we have to. So you won't find this on search engines, although you might after this broadcast. You won't find it. So, but you have to actually sit there and listen to the show and type it in order to find it. I mean, this is getting extremely vile. You know, the idea is that the mainstream press is all controlled. You won't get any of this information on there. Everyone is driven onto the internet and social media. Social media often bans this stuff, like people like Facebook and Twitter are banning a lot of this material, and they're doing what they call shadow banning it. So it's there, but it just doesn't appear on a search. And then finally, we've got the search engines that are supposed to be the index to the internet. They're banning it too. So the internet is becoming just as difficult to navigate as the mainstream press.
That's right, and that's why it's so important to get together in person. I mean, I've run a lot of events during this last 5 years. I'm usually what I call the person in the background. You know, I've worked with Dan Aston Gregory. I was the site manager and coordinator for the practical side of his event with Pete Lawrence called Camp Out 23. I was helping to coordinate the Road to Geneva campaign, which was saying no to the WHO. I was the coordinator for the volunteer team for the People's Reset UK in Bath. And all of these events, during this last 5 years, what my partner and I have done, we've always gone to where there are people and learnt from each other. We've been, you know, during the lockdowns, we had weekly gatherings in our house to sing kirtan, devotional songs, and people could walk in. They could just come in and join us, because this is how we can overcome this kind of vileness that you're talking about, by being together. And our events, they're the most amazing way to network, to feel empowered, to meet people who are standing up to this tyranny. And that's what we need.
So anyway, can you just wind up by reminding us where this event is, and if people are interested in other events, whereabouts they can find those online?
Yes, sure. So this event is Council Tax, Do We Pay or Resist? Sunday, 27th of April, 9:30 to 4 at Goffin Land, Pinhoe, Exeter, is just off the M5, and the postcode EX49JL. And yes, everybody is welcome. And you can, the only thing is that I think the best thing is the website for sevenconcernedcitizens.co.uk, because that's an easy one to find, and then you'll find the ticket link on that website.
And how much is it?
£12 for a ticket for the day, and we also have lunch, organic lunch for £8, organic soup, roll and brownie, and bring a mug and a folding chair.
Okay, Catherine Armitage, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you so much.